once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Monday, December 16th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we fire up a new week here on the program. One guest with me for the full show, that is professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Also along the way, we'll talk about his new website, bettersportspicks.com. We'll do our college football first look here for the first round of the bowl games. Then we'll do our handicapping the hardwood segment in the second half of today's show, taking a look at a few injuries around the country, then also some of the big and interesting games here for this week in college basketball. We've got everything for you over at bangthebook.com as well, rolling out bowl previews on all of the bowl games. We've got daily college basketball, daily NBA, daily NHL with Parker Michaels. Lots of NFL content as we finish up the last 2 weeks of the regular season here. A lot of things going on over at bangthebook.com. Please make sure you check them all out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guess, two segments. College football, college basketball today with Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Going good, man. Busy time of the year. Everything going on that it is this time of the year and busy time in the sports world. But we're kind of used to that by now. So we understand that this is a busy time of the year and looking forward to talking some bowl games. I have to say that I really love bowl season. Always have. I know that there are some bad games mixed in, but it's always an interesting time of the year.
It really is a very interesting time of the year. And again, what we're going to do here on today's show, we've already talked in generalities on this segment and our previous segments about the bowl season, but we'll sort of follow through and kind of drive those points home a little bit more here as we go through the two bowl games on Friday and all the FBS bowl games coming up here on Saturday. So we'll go ahead and dive right in. Again, we'll roll through all of the bowl games here for Friday and Saturday on today's segment. We start with game 201-202, Buffalo and Charlotte. Buffalo, 6.5-point favorite, just about market-wide. Extra juice on the 6.5 as well. So looks like we may be going to 7 here on this one in the Bahamas Bowl with Buffalo a big favorite over Charlotte. And this is one of those line moves that is very interesting and one that you should pay close attention to because, as we know, the MAC is traditionally very bad in the bowl season.
Yeah, I'm going to start off by saying I don't know if I'm qualified to talk about this game or not. I've had some Bahamas bad beats and epic form over the last few years. Had Western Kentucky a few years ago. I still have some bad dreams about that one once in a while. They were up 49-7 against Central Michigan and then failed to cover. And then last year I had under 66 and it goes 35-32 with the Hail Mary touchdown pass right at the buzzer. So really, I'm really scared to say too much about this game, to be honest with you. I hope that Adam will give you a stronger take on this game than what I can. I will say that, you know, the big thing about this one, as far as the line move is just, you know, it's like you said, very strange to see the MAC getting so much love. And as we talked about last week, and I still think this is the case, a lot of MAC teams that I kind of wanted to go against are in favorable positions or are playing a team that has lots of problems themselves. So it makes it a little bit hard to fade the MAC. You know, both of these teams have played a really weak schedule so far this year. Conference USA was very weak. Obviously, the MAC was very bad. So I don't think that either one of these teams are very good. I think that Charlotte, a team where, you know, they clearly outperformed expectations by a large margin. Very, very nice season from them, but they haven't been here. You know, Buffalo under Leipold, a team that you assume will be ready for a game like this. Charlotte, I think they have a good coaching staff, but this is a bit unique to them. And you can go back through past years and see the teams who have been here before tend to do better ATS. I know I don't mean just specifically at the same bowl game. I mean just in bowl season. You know, bowl season preparation is unique. Charlotte doesn't have that. They haven't been there anytime recently. Buffalo, a team that's at least somewhat used to this. I think that's why the line move's coming. And like I said, Charlotte's played an extremely weak schedule as well. So, you know, nobody is too excited to back them. But, you know, I'm seeing even seven some places now showing up. And I will say it would be hard for me to lay 7 points with Buffalo, a team that on offense they've been pretty weak. You know, I think they have a pretty good defense. But on offense, Buffalo, not a team that I'd really want to have to win by a margin.
Yeah, you know, this one's interesting to me because you've got two teams that like to run the football, and they're both pretty proficient at running the football. In fact, Buffalo has two 1,000-yard rushers in Jared Patterson and also Kevin Marks. Charlotte runs the football effectively as well. The key difference here between these two teams is that Buffalo is much better defensively, and Charlotte really struggles to stop the run. That's been a big problem for them here over the course of the season. Charlotte 99th in yards per play allowed, 110th in yards per carry allowed at 4.94. That's kind of what Buffalo does. They sort of run the football, lean on you, kind of try to out-physical you, and then have the upper hand in the second half. And, of course, weather could be a factor here in this game, whether it's precipitation or humidity. It's going to be hot, humid, probably pretty sultry for an afternoon game. So if Buffalo is able to control the line of scrimmage, as they have so many times here over the course of the season, Charlotte may wear down in the second half. And I think that that's part of the handicap too. Now, that being said, if this game gets to seven, I'm going to take a piece of Charlotte here. As you mentioned, both of these teams playing very weak schedules per Sagarin, Buffalo at 122, Charlotte at 126. My line here is 5.5. I do think Charlotte can move the football a little bit. And if they can force Buffalo into a position to have to be multifaceted on offense, you can have success against the Bulls because they cannot throw the football very effectively. Defensively, Buffalo is really good at generating pressure, generating sacks. Charlotte really good at avoiding sacks. This is probably going to be a boring run the football, maybe lower scoring type of game. But if it gets to seven, I think I'm going to have to take a piece of Charlotte here just because, again, I think these two teams have so many similarities that planning for each other is not too difficult to do.
Yeah, I would say if I had to take something in this game, I'd probably take the under here. I think that Buffalo runs the ball a lot. Like you said, I think that Buffalo will have success running. Charlotte has been very weak against the run throughout the course of the season, but it's likely that Buffalo will take their time getting up the field. Buffalo 102nd in the nation in tempo, Charlotte 119th. So you have a total that's as high as 57 points some places. The forecast right now shows a lot of wind. Obviously, there's plenty of wind there to start with just about all the time. But, you know, if the forecast that says that I'm looking at right now, 25 miles per hour wind actually happens, then that certainly matters. And it would make the game even more conservative. As I said, you know, there's been some strange stuff happen in the Bahamas Bowl. And I do kind of think that, you know, it makes sense that this might be a bit of a question mark of a game based on handicapping it. So I wouldn't want to bet a lot on this game regardless. I do think that, you know, at seven, Charlotte is intriguing to me. Buffalo, the team that I still think will win outright, but, you know, 4.5 up to seven is a pretty big move. 82% of the bets here on Buffalo. So, I mean, everybody's betting on Buffalo. To me, it's one of those spots where I have to be cautious, and we've talked about the MAC all year. They're just so weak. You know, I hate to lay that kind of points with the MAC. Charlotte, a team that, you know, clearly has their weaknesses. Charlotte's been able to move the football pretty well this year, even against some pretty good defenses. So I do think they'll be able to move the ball here. Slight lean toward Charlotte, a little bit stronger lean toward the under.
Well, and I'll bring up a stat we talked about last week here, and then we'll move on from this game. Teams receiving 40% or less of the bets, 59.6% against the spread since 2005. Again, 59.6%. So again, fading the public generally makes some sense in bowl season. That being said, again, with the nature of this line move, the team it's coming in on, it's not just the public on Buffalo, it's also sharp money on Buffalo. So you would be going up against that a little bit here in this one. How about we go to the Frisco Bowl here? Kent State and Utah State. Another MAC team taking some money here. Not as big of a line move, but down from 8 to 7, although 7.5 starting to pop up again here now as we get closer to kickoff. Again, now that it's game week, limits will increase. We'll see some more movement out there in the marketplace. But so far, a little bit of interest in the Kent State side from the betting market.
Yeah, this is a tough game for me. You know, I don't want to bet Utah State. I don't think Gary Anderson's done a good job at all with this team. And I think that you and I said pretty quick after they announced this, hire that, even though he did pretty well at Utah State, usually the second time around, it doesn't go that well. You know, unless you're a really good coach, I don't really like hiring back somebody who was there before. So far, you know, what happened was Jordan Love's NFL draft stock got ruined. So, you know, Utah State's offense, while everybody knew they'd be weaker, they were way weaker than they should have been this year. You know, Kent is a team that, to me, I'd give Kent the head coaching edge in this game. Kent, a MAC team, getting 7.5 points, 7 points at some books. You know, to me, 55% of bets so far on Kent and 74% of the money. So there's certainly some sharp money here on Kent. Also, the over 53% of the bets, pretty split on the money, too. I would lean to the over in this game. I would think that Utah State would be able to score on Kent. I know some people had said that they wondered if Jordan Love would play. He said he was going to play. I don't think there's been any update to that. So I assume Jordan Love will play in this game. But that's something that, you know, would at least be on my radar, is to make sure that Jordan Love's going to play here. Because obviously, you know, the drop off from Jordan Love to the second stringer is pretty significant, even though he had a really disappointing season so far this year. Kent State, to me, a team that has played better later in the year. Both of these teams want to play really fast. That's what stands out to me the most of this game. Kent State, eighth in tempo in the country. Utah State, second. So you're going to see a lot of snaps in this game. Utah State's defense is 60th in yards per play allowed. Kent State, 109th. Neither team's really very good on offense either, 75th and 73rd in yards per play. But they're going to get a lot of snaps off. As long as the weather's okay here, I would lean to the over. I think, you know, you just get that many possessions. And then a stat that I wanted to mention here today is that bowl games between two teams with a winning percentage lower than 65%, the over is 114 and 89, which is 56.2% overs. Basically what this means is the bowl games that aren't as good at bowl games are teams who haven't played quite as well over the course of the season. The over has done better. And some of the bigger bowl games where you have teams who are 11-2 or 10-2, 10-3, things like that, the under has done a little bit better than has the over. So that's something to keep in mind as you look through these bowl games as well.
Well, we'll see what this one looks like, because this one's actually being played in a soccer stadium. So, you know, I guess we'll see what the playing surface looks like there at Toyota Stadium in Frisco, Texas. You and I are on the same wavelength here. If I'm playing this game, it's going to be the over. Jordan Love is going to play, and in fact, he's declared for the NFL draft. So this will be his last college game. There was some speculation as to whether or not he would transfer, go into that transfer portal, maybe end up at Oklahoma, something like that. He's opted to go ahead and try to go to the NFL draft. So if I'm Gary Anderson, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, this kid's not had a very good year. Our offense hasn't looked very good. I want him to go out there and throw for 500 yards and put us on the map and help us from a recruiting standpoint. So I think there's some incentive for Utah State to run up as much offense as they possibly can here in this game. Kent did allow 6.3 yards per play on defense. However, they allowed 7.2 yards per play to the three Power Five teams that they played. And give Kent credit. I mean, the fact that they're in a bowl game, given the schedule that they had, I mean, they played what? Auburn, Arizona State, and the other team
is Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. I mean, they played three, you know, pretty quality, going out to Tempe, no less. Three pretty quality Power Five teams. They're still here in a bowl game. So credit to them for that. Sean Lewis, a creative guy, a creative play caller. The over is the play to me here. If Kent State had gone up to 10 or something like that, I maybe would have taken a piece of the golden flashes. But coming down, I'm only looking at the total here in this one.
Yeah, I can't play Kent State with this amount of points either. Like I said, I don't want to lay the points with Utah State. I don't really trust them. I do like the over here, a decent amount. I think that, you know, you get that many snaps, you get two defenses who have given up a decent amount of big plays so far this year. Kent State especially, 32 plays given up of 30 yards or more, which is 101st in the country. Utah State, pretty weak defensively as far as the big plays as well. They've given up 22 plays to 30 yards or more. They've given up 58 plays of 20 yards or more. Kent State's given up 63 plays of 20 yards or more. So you would expect some big plays here. You get that combination of big plays, really fast tempo. You should probably see quite a few points put up. Like you said, I'm not exactly sure about the surface of this field. You know, unless it's really bad, you would think that this would be a good overlook in this game. There hasn't been very many bets placed on this game, and that doesn't really surprise me too much. you know, with the two teams not really being big names. But as you know, as we get later in the week here, it's going to be one of the only two games going on, and it'll be the only game going on that night. So I think there will be quite a bit of action here come in later this week.
All right, so we go to Saturday here, and yours is the Bahamas Bowl. Mine is the New Mexico Bowl, where just for whatever reason, something goes wrong with the side or the total that I play. And I've got a position on this game already here between Central Michigan and San Diego State. I'll go ahead and lay it out there. Like I talked about last Thursday with Brad Powers, I went ahead and took Central Michigan at +4.5. Him and I have a side bet on this game now. He's got San Diego State at 3.5. I have this one virtually lined as a pick'em type game. And that's even with giving San Diego State a little bit of home field because they're accustomed to this setting. They played in New Mexico before. They're a little bit more in tune with the altitude, stuff like that. I just think Central Michigan's the better team here. So what's your take on the game?
Yeah, if I had to bet the side, I would take Central Michigan. I don't have to bet the side, so I won't be. You know, I have to lean to the under with San Diego State. I mean, they're just an under machine, 11-1 to the under this year. I was really hoping this number would be 42 or higher, and I'll hold out hope that there's some chance it gets to 42. I don't think it probably will, though, because who's going to be too excited to bet an over with San Diego State in it? San Diego State's just the team, like I've said before, that you couldn't really set up a team better to be an under team. They really struggle running the football, but that's what they want to do. And Ryan Agnew has not been good enough passing the football to even keep teams honest. So Washington not healthy at running back. I will say Central Michigan's offense has been far better than I expected them to be this year. I think that McElwain did a really, really good job with them. It is a long travel for them, and that makes me kind of wonder how they'll do. Both teams have played a weak schedule again here. Central Michigan plays at about an average tempo. San Diego State 100th in tempo, so pretty slow. The big edge here, I will say, that would caution me a little bit about playing Central Michigan, San Diego State's special teams edge is really big. 11th in special teams, according to S&P, and Central Michigan is 107th. So it wouldn't shock me to see San Diego State win because of special teams, especially since San Diego State has a really good kicker now, and that's something that they haven't had in the past. You know, I don't want to bet the side here. I want to bet the under. I don't know that I can do it. I will say, if you look at yards per play margin, it's not surprising to me that Central Michigan has been bet down at this point. They're +0.85 yards per play, which is 30th best in the country. San Diego State, -0.03 yards per play, 79th in the country. So I think that says quite a bit. I will say also, Central Michigan, -7 in turnover margin. San Diego State, +15. So some really interesting stats there.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of ammunition to why I like the Chippewas here in this one. And again, I mean, you look at their scoring defense and it's not great, but they're 42nd in the country in yards per play allowed on defense with 5.3. So again, speaks to the impact that the turnovers have had for them. The thing for me is this. I think Central Michigan's defense is good enough, and obviously it doesn't take a very good defense to slow down San Diego State. If San Diego State needs to score points in this game, I don't know if they can do it. And I do think that Central Michigan has an offense that can move the football, even against that Rocky Long 3-3-5. So one of two positions I've taken so far in the bowl season here is Central Michigan over San Diego State in that New Mexico Bowl. We jump down to the next game here, and this is kind of an interesting one. Liberty and Georgia Southern in the Cure Bowl. Liberty's first bowl appearance as a program. Season starts with Hugh Freeze coaching from a hospital bed. Season ends with going to a bowl game against the Georgia Southern triple option. Line comes down from 6 to 4.5 or 5 out there. Total, though, going up from 56.5 to as high as 60 in the marketplace. Any thoughts on this one, Kyle?
Yeah, this is an interesting game to me. This may be the most interesting one we've talked about thus far. I would say that, you know, this is a team in Liberty that has played a very weak schedule. I don't have Georgia Southern's schedule right in front of me right now as far as Sagarin's numbers, but it has to be stronger than Liberty's. You know, if you look at Georgia Southern, they're a team who runs the football over and over again. Liberty has not shown that they can stop the run. 4.67 yards per carry allowed. I don't think they're going to stop Georgia Southern. I mean, it kind of surprises me that this line has moved to where it has at this point. If you look at yards per play margin on the year so far, That's probably why it is. I think some of the people who just blindly bet this, plus 0.63 yards per play for Liberty and minus 0.36 yards per play for Georgia Southern. But like I said, Liberty has played some really bad teams. They played New Mexico State twice, I believe, right? I think that's the team they played twice. You put New Mexico State on your schedule twice, it's going to make your strength of schedule pretty weak. So they also played at Rutgers. I believe they lost that game. They played Maine, Hampton. You know, very weak schedule for Liberty. And to me, this Liberty team, while they've shown that they can move the football pretty well through the air, they haven't been able to run it. They're going to have to be able to throw on Georgia Southern here. I assume they will be able to throw. There would be some thought of taking an over in a game like this, but you see the total. I mean, it's 60 at Chris right now. You take a total of 60 with a team that's running the triple option and playing at the second slowest tempo in the country, and that's Georgia Southern. I can't take an over at that number with a team like that running the football every single time and playing that slowly. So that total is too high for my liking. My number is several points lower than that. I don't really want to bet the under. Here, I would lean Georgia Southern minus the points. I think this is a bit overdone on the line move.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I like the under in this game as well. And, you know, Liberty's best win on the season, they beat Buffalo, but that was the week after Buffalo played Penn State. And, in fact, Buffalo led at halftime in that game. The third quarter, they completely fell apart. But Buffalo led at halftime in that game against Penn State. So that was not a good spot for the Bulls. That's Liberty's best win. Their wins, Buffalo, Hampton, New Mexico, New Mexico State twice, Maine, and UMass. So they essentially have six FCS wins as far as I'm concerned, given that New Mexico and New Mexico State, you know, both in the bottom five for me. UMass, the worst team in the country, the worst power-rated team I've ever had in my power ratings. Liberty played the 132nd ranked schedule. There are 130 FBS teams. So they literally played an FCS type schedule. You know, the games they lost, they were supposed to lose. I agree with you. I think the under is the look here. I liked it even at 57. I wrote up in my bull preview, hey, wait this thing out because I bet it's going to keep going up. That does wind up being the case here. I lean Liberty just because you know what Georgia Southern's going to do. Liberty had 32 sacks in 12 games. That was tied for 33rd in the nation. So maybe they've got some good edge rushers. Maybe they've got some good edge play that can kind of keep contain, you know, allow the linebackers and safeties to be gap responsible. But again, I mean, Hugh Freeze, it's not like he's seen the option a ton, even when he was at Ole Miss. So, you know, I think for me, I think the under is the way to go, because if you think Georgia Southern moves the football, their goal in every game is to limit the number of possessions. Liberty's going to have to be efficient with their possessions. They probably can be, but again, they played such a bad schedule that you have to adjust some of their numbers a little bit. I think the under is the way to go here. I don't love the side either way, and I don't love the matchup either. I mean, I think schematically it's kind of fun, but I'll probably be doing something else. I'll be watching my New Mexico Bull bet go up in flames somehow instead.
Yeah, I like how you were able to bash UMass one more time, too, when you talked about Liberty. God. I mean, you know, just one more chance to hit the Minutemen a little bit there. But Liberty's 17th in yards per play on offense. But, I mean, when you played the defenses, like you just said, they're wins. Those teams are just so bad on defense that, you know, being 17th in yards per play is pretty misleading. You know, Liberty's offense is clearly not that good. They can't run the football. They have to be able to throw it. They probably will be able to throw it some here. If you think that Georgia Southern's going to be in control of this game, you probably like the under, because like you said, they want to limit possessions as much as they can. And as long as Liberty doesn't give up a ton of huge runs to where, you know, they get 20 or 25 yards on a run, you probably think that this total's getting a little bit too high. So I'm going to lean to the under, and I'll lean to Georgia Southern in this one.
All right, so we go to the Boca Raton Bowl here. SMU, Florida Atlantic, obviously a ton going on with this game. Lane Kiffin takes the job in Oxford at Ole Miss. You've got Glenn Spencer, the defensive coordinator, is the interim for this one. I updated my interim head coaches in bowl games article over at bangthebook.com. I encourage you to check that out. It is literally a coin flip proposition straight up and against the spread. I think it's 49.28% against the spread, 50%, 35 and 35 straight up. Four interim head coaches in bowl games. SMU, some NFL caliber talent for the Mustangs that I think really wants to show out a little bit in this game. The line moved to 3.5 made all the sense in the world to me. The line coming back down to 3, I'm not sure how to interpret that.
I like SMU in this game. I think, like you said, the line move going up to 3.5 made a lot of sense to me. Florida Atlantic with, Kiffin going to Mississippi. And this is a really interesting spot for Florida Atlantic. I mean, it's weird because it's played at Florida Atlantic. SMU clearly has played some better ranked teams this year than has Florida Atlantic. SMU has a lot more firepower than does Florida Atlantic. If you look at Florida Atlantic's numbers for the course of the season, they moved the ball pretty well in conference play, but in non-conference action, they were really struggling. I know that they played some really good teams in that time. That's at least part of the reason, but I don't think Florida Atlantic has the offense that some people think they do this year. SMU does have that offense, and like you said, some NFL talent, some very good wide receivers, especially. SMU, I think it's going to be tough for Florida Atlantic to keep up with them in this game. You see a total of 70.5. I don't have any strong lean on the total. I believe my number here was 70. So we're right at my number. I like SMU by more than this. My number here was SMU -5. And that's knowing that Florida Atlantic gets the home field advantage. I think SMU is just the more talented team. 77% of the bets are on SMU, and that's one thing that would caution me a little bit. This has been a heavily bet game so far, although I think it's fair to say that most of the bets that have happened so far are probably not the public. Would the public really be interested in a game 2 weeks before it happened? Because most of the bets here happen right away. So I think there's certainly sharp action here on SMU. As you look at these two teams over the course of the season, Florida Atlantic was able to win quite a few games, but I don't think they have a dominant team by any means. And I do think SMU, even in some of their losses, they played pretty well against those higher-ranked teams. So I like SMU in this one.
I really like SMU. I mean, my number here is 4, giving Florida Atlantic the full home field advantage with 3 points. And I don't think that's justified here because a lot of students are going to be on winter break. Part of the fun of going to a bowl game is the experience. Well, for FAU, they're just at home, And again, for SMU here, chance to win 11 games for the first time since 1982. Haven't won a bowl game since 2012. Got blown away by La Tech in the Frisco Bowl 2 years ago, 51-10. I think SMU is supremely motivated. I don't think we can say the same about FAU. I mean, maybe Willie Taggart's going to keep Glenn Spencer around. I don't think that's going to be the case. We'll see if that picture gets a little bit clearer. Hiring Taggart is great. They know who's there now. Taggart's back in Florida in the group of 5. Should be a much better spot for him than Florida State was. But I just don't know if this FAU team gets up for this game. I'm not sure if they do. I think, winning the conference in Lane's final game, that was kind of their bowl game here. I think for SMU, they've got guys with a lot more incentive. Bouchel, Prochet, Roberson, Jones, those guys on offense that really want to put on a show. And I think they have the opportunity to do that here. This is one of my favorite plays of the bowl season too. Now that it's back down to 3, I'll take a piece of SMU. So it'll be my third position here of the bowl season, but I don't get this line coming back down. It's SMU all the way for me here in this one. We move down to the,
can I add something else about this game here real quick? Florida Atlantic also +20 in turnover margin this year. First in the country. That's really excessive. It's rare to see a team +20 at any point in the season. Florida Atlantic, a team to me that is overvalued at this point. And I'm glad that you brought up the home angle. I don't even know if it's a good thing that Florida Atlantic's playing at home here. Part of the fun is going somewhere else. They're at home. They just lost their coach. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they're excited to get Willie Taggart or not. I don't pretend to know that one, but I would think that they didn't really want to see Kiffin go, and now they're playing at home. I don't think this is a good spot for them at all. I'm going to agree with you, and I like SMU a good amount here.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, last year, what was it? USF was at home, right? In the Gasparilla Bowl. They played Marshall, and I mean, that was a no contest. That was 38-20, and it really wasn't even that close. So, yeah, I just, it's not something that you want to do. You want to be able to go somewhere and do something different. So I don't think there's any home field edge for FAU here at all whatsoever. We'll probably move through this game pretty quickly, a couple of the next 3 games to make sure we get over to the college basketball side of things here. But the Camellia Bowl, Florida International, Arkansas State. Arkansas State down from 3 to 2.5, pretty much market wide. very little activity on the total for this one. This is not a bowl game that's really on my radar a whole lot. I don't have too strong of an opinion on this one. My line is Arkansas State -3.5, but I can't envision myself playing this one.
I can't envision myself playing this one either. I have -3 for Arkansas State. Florida International had that good win over Miami, but you know, Miami is not what a lot of people thought they would be. Florida International had some poor performances on the road. So, you know, can we really trust Florida International to have a good performance here? I don't think we know what we're going to get from them. Conference USA was clearly very weak this year. The Sun Belt's always a weaker conference. If I had to play this game, I think I'd probably take Arkansas State here, but not a game that I'm interested in. As you mentioned about one of the games earlier, this is one where if this game's going on, it'd be fine with me if we watch something else.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is this. I think that there's a chance, and I don't know this for sure, but I think that there's a chance that with everything that this Arkansas State program has been through this year, with the death of head coach Blake Anderson's wife, Wendy, you know, all the support, the breast cancer support, all that type of thing, I think that they want Blake Anderson to go out with a win here. So, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say that FIU is not motivated, but I think for Arkansas State, you know, they sort of want to end this thing with a win, especially for the seniors that, you know, wound up getting so close to Wendy and, you know, she was around the program as much as she was. I think that that could be there. And again, it's an unquantifiable angle. I don't know that for sure. It's a little bit of a speculatory thing on my part. But I think Arkansas State will be invested here. I think that their seniors and their leadership and their upperclassmen want to give Blake Anderson that bowl win. That would be kind of the reason that I would maybe look to play this game, or maybe, you know, being in a bowl pool, something like that, you have to pick a side. I think Arkansas State is more invested in this game than we may see on the surface.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. It's always hard to know the mindset of a team in a spot like that, but I agree with you. Anderson's been a good coach for this team, and I like him as a coach. You know, he's been a very positive figure for them. He's really done a good job navigating through a very tough season for him. So honestly, as a fan, I'd also like to see Arkansas State win this game. I will say that you could make the argument that Florida International is the more talented team here. So I'm just kind of not strong about this game at all.
All right, so we go to the Las Vegas Bowl here. Washington and Boise State, the swan song for Chris Peterson. And I didn't really go on a rant about this last week on the show, and I won't do it here this week. Well, I'll do it at some point here this week probably. But you know, they did Chris Peterson wrong here. I think giving him Boise State in his final game where, okay, fine, it's going to draw ratings, it gets the storylines, you'll have all the features on, you know, all the pregame shows and everything, but it was already going to be a very emotional game for Peterson. Now you jack that up times 10, taking on the Boise State team that, you know, he got his first head coaching gig with, was an offensive coordinator there for a long time, really, you know, gave that program its signature win over Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl. They did him wrong here, but his team will show up. We know Boise State will show up. Should be a competitive game here with the Huskies -3.5.
Yeah, you know, I almost played Washington -3 when this line came out. I think it was the first night it was -3. I thought about this one a little while, decided I'd think about it a little bit more. It's up to 3.5. If you look at how the Pac-12's done in bowl games, it really scares you. I mean, you know, it's hard to back a Pac-12 team. Maybe you've already looked at this one, but do you happen to know how the Pac-12 has done in the last 3 years ATS in bowl games?
Not very good.
5-17 ATS. As a favorite, 2-10 ATS. Oof. So, I mean, who wants to get too excited to back the Pac-12 laying points? Harsin's teams have been good in bowl games, too. I mean, you know, as I started looking at that, they've covered pretty easily in a lot of those games. So, gosh, I don't know. I mean, I still lean to Washington in this game. I don't think I'm going to play this one. You know, maybe it'll be one that as it's going on and Washington's winning by 14 or something like that late in the game, I'll be kicking myself for it. But, you know, it's not easy to want to lay points with a Pac-12 team. Boise State should be up for this game, too. I don't know any reason why they wouldn't be ready to play here. Now, Washington's been really inconsistent. I think Washington should win this game. like you said, I agree with you. Peterson, I like him as a coach, and I wonder if he'll be back somewhere later or not, or if this is, you know, just a full retirement. I will say that, you know, I think he's done a really good job over the years. And I know that he's been a little bit slow to respond as far as offense, you know, not being as innovative as some of the other teams. And some people have had some qualms about that, certainly. And I think that's fair. But Peterson, on the whole, has been an excellent coach. He's done a great job. And I agree with you. It's a shame that he has to play against Boise State. You know, of all the teams he could play against, I'm sure that this is the one he didn't want to play against.
Now, if this was just a regular Las Vegas Bowl that Washington was in, I would fade them, because this is not a team that plays in a bowl game like this. You know, the last 3 years, Rose, Fiesta, and Peach Bowl for the Washington Huskies. So if this wasn't Peterson's last game, if this wasn't Boise State, I'd be fading Washington playing one of these really early bowl games. Because of everything else surrounding this game, it's difficult. You know, I mean, this is not a very good defense relative to, you know, what Washington has done over the last several years. You know, in terms of yards per play here, they're 30th. Okay, that doesn't sound bad, but you look at this team, 11th last year, third in 2017, fourth in 2016, 23rd in 2015. They're supposed to be better than this. And Boise State can move the football. So I think maybe I lean towards the over 49.5 here. I kind of look for some points here in this game, and we are seeing this go up to 50 in a few places. I'm not going to play the side. You know, again, I think a lot of people came into this and said, I'm backing Washington at any price in Peterson's last game, and then this is the matchup you get. So I don't think I can play a side here. Maybe I'll play the over 49.5, because Washington's defense just hasn't lived up to expectation with some of their losses over the last couple of years to the NFL. But, you know, this game, I think it's going to be fun to watch. I think it's going to be interesting to talk about. I just don't think it's a great game from a betting standpoint.
I agree. That's what I was going to say as well. You know, the more I look at this game, the less likely I am to make a bet on this game. I am likely to want to watch this one. I think it's very interesting from a fan standpoint, but I don't see much value here now.
All right, one more bowl game to talk about here, and then we'll talk some college basketball. UAB and Appalachian State, 217-218, the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl. App State, anywhere from 16.5 to 17 out there in the marketplace. Eli Drinkwitz goes on to Missouri. I was mentioning on Twitter, I think, that, you know, South Carolina should just fire Muschamp and hire Drinkwitz. Well, Drinkwitz goes to Missouri, so now they're going to run into him on an annual basis. In any event, Sean Clark was supposed to be the interim for Appalachian State here, but then they went ahead and gave him the job, the offensive line coach. So now he'll be the head coach going forward here for Appalachian State, who is clearly a better team than UAB. Bad schedule for UAB, but that's still a pretty good defense, getting a ton of points here in the Big Easy.
Yeah, I mean, this one is an interesting game in that UAB is clearly a weak team. 138th in strength of schedule, according to Sagarin. And like you said, there's 130 teams at FBS. So that tells you how weak their schedule was. You know, 108th for App State. App State did play some good teams. They play in a weak league. You know, on the surface, I would lean toward taking App State in this one, -16.5. It's a large number with a total of 48. And UAB, really well-coached team. They have a lot of time to get ready for this game. UAB is 8th in yards per play allowed on defense. Now, they're certainly not the 8th best defense in the country. We know that based on who they've played against. But, you know, a quality defense, App State has not been as good defensively this year as they were in past seasons. They had some really high scoring games some of the time there. You know, yards per play margin, 20th for App State and 26th for UAB. So UAB's been pretty good in that area. Both of these teams pretty equal in special teams. Both of these teams tend to play fairly slowly. If I had to play something on the total, I would probably play the under. My number here is 47, so it's not like I have a big edge or anything. I still kind of like App State if I had to play a side. But, you know, I'm very hesitant to lay this many points with a total that low. I do wonder, though, how many points UAB can score here. I mean, how is UAB going to score very much? Though App State's defense isn't as good as they've been in past years, App State's defense is a lot better than what UAB has played against almost the entire season.
Yeah, that's the big thing here is, you know, how good is this UAB defense? I mean, we've got one decent data point. They played Tennessee, held Tennessee to 4.6 yards per play, but Tennessee's not, you know, a great offense. And at that point in the season, they still didn't really know which end was up. App State, you know, the schedule doesn't look good, but it's not really their fault that North Carolina, you know, kind of squeaked into a bowl game, that South Carolina didn't make it to a bowl game. You know, North Carolina, transitional year with a couple new coordinators. South Carolina playing one of the toughest schedules in college football. I can't hold that against App State. And I think it's Sagarin is doing that a little bit to some degree. If I'm taking anything here, I'm laying the big price. UAB, 43 sacks in 13 games. But Zach Thomas is mobile. App State loves to run the football. I don't think UAB gets back there, creates those negative plays. That could expose their defense a little bit. The one big thing is App State, you know, plus 12 in turnover margin, 12th in the country, something else you want to take a look at here. But UAB, you know, their quarterbacks have been injured throughout the year. They don't move the football well. App State probably wins this thing something like a 28-7, you know, 31-10 type of score. Good enough to cover the number there. It's App State for me. I don't know if I'll play it, but I'm kind of starting to lean that way because I got to have some action on Saturday, and I don't love the card for the most part.
Agree. I mean, you know, I would lay the points here with App State if I was taking a side. I'm going to look at this game a little bit more. I do lean to the under, and the more we talk about this game, I just don't know how many points UAB can score. I mean, you know, if you want UAB to cover this game, I mean, what if UAB scores 14 points? 31-14 would be, you know, App State covering the 16.5. I don't know that UAB can score any more than that. You know, it would surprise me if UAB scores very many points in this game. So I would lean App State and the under here.
One question about this game is that App State played in this bowl last year. So, you know, does it lose some of its luster? Does it lose some of that novelty? I think the fact that you've got a new head coach there in Sean Clark, who is still within the program. I mean, they did promote from within. Maybe that kind of keeps them a little bit more focused that now they've got another different voice, you know, after Scott Satterfield left, had an interim last year in this bowl and blew out Middle Tennessee 45-13. You know, I think that's kind of an interesting angle to this one, but I don't think it's enough necessarily to keep me off of App State. But before we transition over to the college basketball side of things, Kyle, as we mentioned here, you've got a new website, bettersportspicks.com. And you're going to be doing a lot of free information for the bowl games over there.
Yeah, I put up the first article here a few days ago with bowl season ATS records by conference. That's actually what I was looking at when I was talking about the Pac-12. There's some other interesting ones over there. You know, Big Ten's 9-3 ATS is an underdog. SEC 9-4 ATS is an underdog here the last 3 years. So you can check that one out over at bettersportspicks.com. And I'll be giving some previews for these games. The ones that I don't have premium plays on, I'll be writing up most of these games for free, giving my leans on these games, putting, you know, what the money looks like, who the sharps are taking, things like that. And I know a lot of listeners and a lot of people have talked to me over the years that that's the type of stuff that they really like to see for free. So, you know, provide a lot of that for free over at bettersportspicks.com.
Definitely a website that you want to check out here. And huntersportspicks.com is still going. Kyle's still with premium subscriptions and whatnot over there. And a lot of college basketball stuff going on over there right now, Kyle. And again, obviously, the bowl season, you know, a little bit of a break here for us all in college football, but that'll change here beginning Friday and Saturday. College basketball will not. In fact, it amps up in a big way on Saturday. Huge card, lots of big non-conference games, a lot of low major conferences in action here tonight on Monday. So not a whole lot for us to talk about early on in the week, but there are a few injuries that you did want to bring to light here how to kick off today's segment.
Yeah, I'll start with Seton Hall. I think, you know, what has it been? Every week we talk about Seton Hall at some point, I think. Miles Powell sustained a concussion in the first half against Rutgers. You know, this team's really been snake bit so far as far as injuries. I'm really upset with myself for not taking Rutgers in that game against Seton Hall. It was one of my strong leans that, you know, on Saturday, I had a really miserable day in college basketball, and I'm always honest about this. I've been really running bad here in college basketball of late. You know, a lot of my strong leans have done well that I didn't end up playing, and the plays, you know, have suffered some pretty bad beats, but it's a long season ahead, and I'll just say that, you know, that's one of those where It is, though, easy after the fact to say, well, Rutgers won pretty easily in that game. But Miles Powell missed most of the game, and he didn't know that was going to happen, or it'd be a lot easier to take Rutgers. But Miles Powell, if he's going to be out for any kind of extended time, Seton Hall really doesn't have much at all. I mean, he was everything after Mamukelashvili or Mamukelashvili was out there with his injury. And, you know, Seton Hall doesn't have enough offense. They'll scrap around. They'll use that press defense to try to create some turnovers. But in the half court, how are they going to score? I think Seton Hall, a team that is unbettable without Miles Powell.
I'll throw out another one here that he's been out for a long time, but I just noticed this, and shame on me. I mean, you know, it was tough because this was early November. I was doing so much with college football and the NFL, obviously, here on a daily basis with the show. But I noticed that for Valparaiso, Ryan Fizikas is out again, and he's been out for a long time. And they've actually struggled more on the defensive end this season. I wrote up a preview of tonight's Valpo and Charlotte game over at bangthebook.com, but that was one where I'm kind of looking at Valpo and I'm like, what's up with this team? You know, they're not really performing up to expectation again here. Come to find out Fizikas is hurt. They got a sophomore in Freeman Liberty. Great name, by the way, doing everything for them here so far this season. But that's the thing, man. You know, you've got to try and really dig. And sometimes it's hard to find that news, hard to find that information. Something like Miles Powell is a big deal. Something like Cole Anthony that we'll talk about here in a few minutes. Everybody knows about that one. It's a big deal, but man, these low and mid-major ones, you got to try and find them and exploit them as much as you can.
Yeah, I have to tell you, college basketball is far, far more difficult to find injuries than college football. There's so many more teams, obviously. And until you get to January and February, especially February and March, a lot of people aren't paying too much attention to college basketball. And I'm sure that's something that we'll talk about after bowl season's over, is that, you know, there's a lot of people that don't bet college basketball until after all of college football's over. And then some people that don't bet it at all until after the NFL's over and they want to get ready for March Madness. But these lower teams like Valparaiso, it's very hard to find injury information. Valpo has been really pushing the pace this year. They're 51st in average possession length. Last year they were 304. So they're trying to play very fast, but they're without what I would say is their best shot maker, Ryan Fizikas. So it's not gone great for them. You know, they're 6-4. They're a team that's used to winning quite a bit. The Missouri Valley Conference is a pretty strong conference. So as long as Fizikas is out, and he's been very injury prone, I think Valpo could probably struggle there in the MVC.
Now, there is another injury. Again, we'll work the Cole Anthony one in a little bit more as we talk about North Carolina making the trip up to take on Gonzaga later on in the week. But there is another one that you wanted to mention here over at St. John's.
Yeah, Mustafa Heron sprained his ankle. They thought it might be worse than this when he first got injured. He's questionable for this week's games. I think he's the most important player to his team. I think he'll probably play based on what I've read so far, but I think that's one that you definitely want to pay attention to. St. John's pressing, you know, the 40 minutes of hell defense. This is a St. John's team that really needs to be able to create those steals and score quickly. They're not very good in the half court offense. Heron is a good offensive player. He's very quick, has a good long range shot. I don't think they can afford to have him not on the floor. So St. John's a team that I wouldn't want to bet unless I knew he was playing.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. And, you know, as we take a look here at the schedule for this week, like I said, I mean, things kind of amp up a little bit later on in the week. I did my situational betting article over at bangthebook.com. Lots of in-state stuff. Delaware State, Delaware tonight. North Florida, Florida State tomorrow. Denver, Northern Colorado also tomorrow. You've got Seattle taking on Washington. These little brother, big brother games here on the holidays. Maybe some of these, you know, big brother teams have been playing some of these premier non-conference games, step down in class, take a few punches from some of these lower tier teams. You know, some of those lower tier teams getting big spreads, maybe able to cover some of those numbers. I think Tuesday, a game we could touch on real quickly here, Kyle. Florida and Providence is interesting to me because this one in Brooklyn, Basketball Hall of Fame Invitational, these have been two disappointing teams so far that, you know, I think that both of these teams should be highly invested, highly motivated to get something of a nice win because they haven't found too many of them.
You know, Florida's had a long break here too. They played Butler and lost 76-62. Now they go all the way from December 7th to the 17th without playing.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's what I was going to say. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I will say I can't believe Florida's not been any better than they are. That's a team that I had pegged wrong before the season. I thought they were going to be really good. As I mentioned before, I think it's a little surprising that Florida continues to play so slowly. With the talent and athleticism that they have, you would think they would want to get up and down the court. You know, this is a neutral site game in Brooklyn. So, you know, whether you think that that's a good thing for Providence since they're a little bit closer, probably is, but I don't think that'd make a big difference. Providence has been a big disappointment too. And we've talked about them. You know, a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned Rhode Island as being a good play. That ended up working out well. And then this past weekend, fortunately, worked out well too for Northern Colorado over Wyoming. So hopefully listeners have been able to cash into those plays. Providence has still been very weak. I mean, they won by 4 against Stony Brook this past Saturday. Stony Brook's not a bad team, but Providence has got to win by more than a 4-point margin against them. So even though Florida has not played well this year, I think I would lean to Florida in this game. Florida will probably be laying 4 or 4.5 points. I don't know that I really want to lay the points. I mean, to be honest with you, maybe the under is a better play if Florida continues to play slowly. But you kind of picked out a game that I would say I don't really want to bet here.
No, that's fair. I mean, I'm looking at Providence. I mean, it's largely the same team from last year. They're good on the offensive glass. They're good at forcing turnovers. They're 11th in the country in turnover percentage on defense. And yet, they lose to Northwestern on the road. They lose to Penn at home. Lose to Long Beach State and College of Charleston in one of those Thanksgiving tournaments. The Rhode Island blowout. Sometimes you just kind of wonder, like, what it is about these teams. They have so much talent. I think Ed Cooley is a pretty good coach. This is a team that's probably going to be dangerous in the Big East tournament, as they always are. But there's just some sort of disconnect here, and it's always interesting to try and read into those and try and figure out kind of, you know, where those are and what the reasons are early on in the season. A team like Cincinnati, on the other hand, they host Tennessee coming up here on Wednesday. We know what the problems are with them. Going from Mick Cronin to John Brannan, different style of play. Are they in trouble here against our friend Rick Barnes in Tennessee in the Queen City on Wednesday?
I wouldn't want to bet Cincinnati here. You know, obviously, Tennessee with a disappointing performance there in that last game at home against Memphis, you would think that Tennessee would be up for this game. I think I would lean to Tennessee in this one. And the way Cincinnati lost at the end of the game the other night, if you haven't watched the end of the game, Cincinnati and Colgate, you need to watch the end of that game. It was absolutely wild. Tie game with about 5 seconds left. And Jaron Cumberland takes a shot from behind half court with 5 seconds left. Colgate gets the defensive rebound, and with 1 second left, Cincinnati fouls them and they make a free throw. So Cincinnati basically had the last shot. They were either going to win or go to overtime. They ended up losing in regulation, which is difficult to do, but they were able to do that. So Cincinnati has really had some significant problems. Even in some of their wins, not really been very good. They needed overtime to beat Valpo and UNLV, teams that, you know, they have a lot more talent than those two teams. So I think Cincinnati's a team that I would be looking to fade until they give us reasons to think otherwise.
Well, and then it gets me to start thinking here a little bit about the futures market for the NCAA tournament. If Cincinnati's not going to be that great, and it certainly looks that way, and obviously Brannan did very well at Northern Kentucky, he could turn this thing around. But it gets me to start thinking about futures out of the AAC. You know, Memphis is the team that everyone kind of talks about for, you know, obvious reasons, but, you know, maybe you start looking at taking a long shot Wichita State position, or, you know, Houston with Kelvin Sampson, something like that. Because if Cincinnati is not going to be the team here, you start thinking ahead to March and maybe you find yourself some opportunities.
Yeah. The one I would have said is Wichita State, the first one that you mentioned. I think they've been really impressive so far this year, especially with a team that's not experienced at all. You know, this is a team that won big at Oklahoma State, and then followed it up by beating Oklahoma at home. Some pretty good wins there for them. They blew out South Carolina on a neutral. Their only loss was to West Virginia. Obviously, they haven't played a great schedule so far, but I agree with you. You know, Cincinnati's usually been one of those top teams in that conference. And unless something changes, it looks like they aren't going to be on that same level this year.
All right, so we take a little bit of a jump. Well, actually, I guess we stay here on Wednesday night, but we take a massive jump across the country. North Carolina and Gonzaga. Credit to the Tar Heels for scheduling this game, for going up to Spokane to take on the Bulldogs. The problem is North Carolina, not the same team as they've always been. And as we teased already, no Cole Anthony in this one.
Yeah, and I want to say a stat here about Cole Anthony. It's unbelievable how much he's meant to this team. North Carolina with Cole Anthony on the floor this year, 0.94 points per possession. Without him, 0.85 points per possession. And on defense, they're giving up 0.85 points per possession with him on the floor, and they're allowing 1.02 points per possession without him on the floor. So this is a massive loss. I mean, that splits this deep into the season that you almost never see. So North Carolina, significant loss for them. There's no way I could bet North Carolina in this game or any game anytime soon. The only way I could look at this game is Gonzaga. Obviously, North Carolina coming off that loss to Wofford. Wofford's coach joking after the game, they're not going to schedule us ever again, you know, that type of thing. Maybe they won't, but North Carolina going all the way to Gonzaga. Gonzaga has really impressed me so far this year. If you look at Gonzaga, they had that impressive win against Washington on the road. And you think, man, this is a difficult spot for them playing at Arizona. After that, after coming off the big win against Washington in a game where, you know, obviously that game means a lot to them with the proximity of those two teams. Then they go down to Arizona and win 84-80. Maybe Arizona is not quite as good as we thought, but Gonzaga has some really good wins this year. Oregon on a neutral, at Washington, at Arizona. Gonzaga, you know, is going to be laying double digits in this game, I would think, without Cole Anthony. So I don't know if I want to lay double digits here, but it would be either Gonzaga, ATS, or the under here for me. I think that North Carolina will have a lot of trouble scoring here.
Well, you know, like we mentioned about Cincinnati, coming off of that Xavier game, we know what the crosstown shootout means for those two teams. Not just, I mean, yeah, they lost to Colgate, which obviously looks really bad, but they were also nowhere close to covering that game. Gonzaga here this week, North Carolina on Wednesday. They're going to be over a 20-point favorite against Eastern Washington on Saturday. So you play, of your last six games, Oregon, Michigan, Texas Southern, Washington, Arizona, North Carolina. Then you play Eastern Washington in a massive favorite role. Might be looking to take the Eagles there in one of those little brother, big brother games on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like the look ahead spots that we talk about because, you know, you play that kind of schedule and there's got to be some kind of letdown. And you would think that that would be the game where that would happen.
Now, I know that there was a game that you wanted to mention here over the course of the week. We like to go under the radar, obviously, and talk about a lot of different games. What was the one that you wanted to mention here? UNC Greensboro in a big game that they've got here this week.
Yeah, this is partially because of a situational spot and partially just because I like to talk about some of these mid-majors. And I promise you, as we go deeper into the season and college basketball, we'll talk about plenty of these teams that you're not going to hear anything about anywhere else. You know, nobody likes to talk about those way under the radar games any more than I do. And we've covered those quite a bit over the years. UNC Greensboro just lost on Sunday, the 15th here to NC State at home, 80-77. That was a huge game for that program. I know they put everything into that game. You know, Greensboro makes a big run late, almost pulls it off, but they trailed most of that game. They were down by 13 with 10 minutes left, came back, lost by 3 points. Now they go to Vermont here on Wednesday. Vermont has had a long break. As I've said before, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. They played the 7th, and then they're off all the way till the 18th. You know, I think if Vermont's losing or tied or something at halftime, this is a really good spot to take Vermont in the second half. I like Vermont some full game. I don't know how they'll play in the first half based on that layoff, but I like them to win this game. I think that Vermont has easily the best player on the floor. Anthony Lamb is very, very good. He's taking a high percentage of their shots. He's involved in everything for them. And this is a guy that's going to play in the NBA. Anthony Lamb is a very good player. Nobody on UNC Greensboro's roster can match up with him. Greensboro has played the 302nd toughest schedule so far this year. Vermont has played the 65th toughest schedule. So Vermont has played much tougher teams. UNC Greensboro coming off a tough loss. I like Vermont here. And like I said, I like Vermont second half better even than full game.
It's not even just that UNC Greensboro lost. It was a shot from half court that was the game winner there in that one for NC State. So doubly bad beat for Greensboro there in that one. And again, you don't go up to Vermont a whole lot. You know, I mean, a lot of Greensboro's games, a lot of regional stuff, because there's a lot of good programs around there that they can play, stuff like that. You don't go to Vermont too often. So long travel trip, you know, who knows? There could be weather up there that could delay, you know, flights and buses and everything else. So a very difficult spot there for the Spartans coming up that game on Wednesday night as well. Real quickly, looking ahead to Saturday, I just want to ask you about this. Indiana versus Notre Dame, Purdue versus Butler, these games at Bankers Life Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. And man, I love this. This is awesome to see the Hoosier State doing this with, you know, four really legit programs in that state playing these neutral site games with what should be very spirited crowds in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I like this a lot too. Utah did that there this past weekend. BYU, Utah State, Weber, Utah, those games. I like the ones that do this. You know, this isn't very common anymore is what I'm trying to say. You know, a lot of teams in the past, this was very common. It hasn't been here lately. Indiana, to me, I thought maybe they were back. And then the very next game, they get blown out by Wisconsin in a terrible, terrible showing there. They win against UConn on a neutral, and then they beat Nebraska at home in overtime, which certainly is not very impressive. So Indiana, a team to me that I guess, you know, a bit of an unknown, especially this deep into the season. Indiana's defense was supposed to be their calling card under Miller. Indiana has not been good on defense this year, 138th in effective field goal percentage defense. So to me, that surprises me quite a bit. Notre Dame, a team that I don't think has really been that consistently good either. If you take a look at these teams, I feel like there's quite a bit of unknown with several of these teams. Butler is the team that's been the most consistent here from this state. Butler's 10-1. They had that 1-point loss to Baylor on the road. Certainly not a bad loss at all there. And Butler wasn't rated that highly before the season. You got a Purdue team that's 6-4. Purdue has some good wins. They beat VCU on a neutral, a pretty good win. A tight loss to Florida State on a neutral. A 29-point win against Virginia. I don't think Virginia is as good as some people think they are this year. And then a 14-point loss here on Sunday night against Nebraska on the road. So Purdue, again, a big question mark to me. I would probably lean Butler in that game, to be honest, and also would lean to the under, but the total will be pretty low. They're probably low 120s.
One last game to mention here for Saturday. I just want to get your take on this one. Ohio State and Kentucky out in Las Vegas at T-Mobile Arena. Something interesting about this game situationally is that Kentucky plays Utah in Las Vegas. I believe that game is either Wednesday or Thursday. Ohio State plays Kentucky in Vegas on Saturday. So Kentucky will have already played a game there. Ohio State making the trip out there for Saturday's contest. The Buckeyes have looked great when they've played these premier teams. Are they able to do it again here?
Yeah, Ohio State had played really well, and they might have gone to number one, but then they lost to Minnesota there on Sunday. Dwayne Washington didn't play in that game, and he's been pretty good for them. He's questionable for this one. I think he makes a difference for that team. Kentucky has been disappointing so far this year, especially on offense. I think Kentucky's defense is pretty good. They're 8th in defensive efficiency, 11th in effective field goal percentage defense. Ohio State's 4th in defensive efficiency and 5th in effective field goal percentage defense. They were really bad on defense against Minnesota. I don't think they'll be bad on defense again here. My lean in this game is the under. I think this could be a tight, low-scoring game here, Ohio State and Kentucky. Ohio State's not as good as they looked here early in the season. And also, you know, that win against North Carolina on the road, maybe that wasn't quite as good a win as we thought. The 25-point win over Villanova at home is certainly impressive. The win over Cincinnati, also not as impressive as some would have thought at the beginning of the season. I think Ohio State's a very good team. I don't know if they're an elite team. I hope so as a Buckeyes fan, obviously. Kentucky, a team that's been disappointing so far this year, but they certainly have the talent and the length and athleticism. I like the under in this game. I think if you get a number, you know, 133 or 134, I think that'd be a good look to the under.
Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com. We already mentioned the free bowl content over at bettersportspicks.com. So what's going over at huntersportspicks.com right now?
Yeah, sign up for the free picks newsletter if you haven't already. They're at huntersportspicks.com. I'll be lowering my prices here and putting out a bowl package here later today. All access bowl package. That's going to be $270 for all plays through bowl season. There'll be a decent amount of plays there, not a huge amount of volume, but a decent amount of plays, and that'll certainly be a savings over paying for every play individually. So check that out, and as we mentioned earlier, I'll mention again one more time the bettersportspicks.com website, where you can check out free information and go to that free members area there and register for the free area. I'll be doing some contests for prizes there, cash prizes coming up here in the next couple weeks as well.
Well, of course, make sure you follow Kyle on Twitter at Kyle Hunter Picks. Kyle Hunter, huntersportspicks.com, as well as bettersportspicks.com. Appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, man. Take care.
There you go. Again, there's professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Coming up on our Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll chat some NFL and some NHL with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Outline. Again, no Ralph Michaels this week, so I'll see what I can do there for that second segment on the Tuesday show. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.